Check.
We're on to the second attribute of canonicity, which is apostolic origins, and you spent a lot of time talking about the covenant. Can you tell us why that's so important?
One of the things that we realize about the New Testament, and certainly the word testamentum, a Latin word underneath it tells us this, it's really, the better word is, it's not just New Testament, it's New Covenant. If we understand the canon, we have to understand undergirding it is a larger, bigger concept of covenant. And this is really critical to get, because what I lay out in the book, and certainly I'm not the first to do this, is that when you start talking about a new covenant, you're really building on a foundation set out by the old covenant. I point out the fact that the New Testament authors really saw themselves as continuing in the tradition of what the Old Testament revelatory books were already doing, which is that when God makes a covenant arrangement, he gives along with it the terms of that covenant in textual documents. So when Jesus says, I'm inaugurating a new covenant, when Jesus tells us he's beginning a new covenant, we would expect there to be new covenant documents that come along with it. And so if you're going to understand what's going on with the New Testament, you have to understand the link between the old and the new there, and that it gives us a sense of why we would expect new documents to be part of the new covenant arrangement.
So the idea is that when you had the original covenant, according to standard way of doing things, there had to be a written document behind it.
Yes. So when you have a covenant like the one made with Israel, it was patterned after covenants in the ancient world that were generally known. So when God said, I'm going to cut a covenant with you, it was patterned after what typically, structurally, was what covenants or treaties did in the ancient world. And in the ancient world, particularly among Hittite treaties, when you made a covenant from king to king, you had written documentation of that covenant that was given to set out the terms and the arrangements of it. So the Israelites already would have had that grid in their head, and the first Christians being Jews would have already had that sort of sense that covenants are closely associated with written documents. So if you say you have a new covenant, then you would have had some sort of written document to go along with it.
So you have Jesus instituting the new covenant, and then the next stage in the process is that the apostles become the agents, you say, of that.
Yeah. I use the term agents of the new covenant, and Paul, of course, himself, in 2 Corinthians 3, I believe, uses the term ministers of the new covenant. So what I love about the role of the apostle is they are what you might call the official implementers or agents or spokesmen or ministers of the new covenant. They are installing it, right? They have the permission, the authority of Christ to speak for him and to operate with his authority. And so they are implementing the terms of that new covenant amongst God's people. And so when you think about who are the people who are the authoritative leaders and installers of the new covenant, it was clearly the apostles. They had a distinctive and I would argue foundational and one-time office designed to begin and install the foundation of the new covenant. Of course, Paul himself sees the apostles this way by describing them as ministers of the new covenant arrangement.
The argument is sometimes made that the apostles really didn't know that they had the authoritative role of writing authoritative documents. That doesn't seem to fit if they understood themselves to be the agents of the new covenant.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the points I labor to make in the book is that when the apostles operated as apostles and function as apostles in their teaching, that they were consciously aware of their own authority. And that authority did not limit itself to oral proclamations. That authority would extend to written proclamations and written content. And Paul, in fact, says as much, that he's to be obeyed whether in his oral teaching or in writing, that his words are to be followed and listened to. And so once the apostles understood themselves as ministers in the new covenant, then you realize that their authority extends to any time they're operating as ministers of the new covenant, which certainly would have included their preaching and their oral proclamations. And certainly, and this is, of course, the key point here, certainly when they wrote that message down. So when the apostles in the office of apostle wrote down the apostolic message, what would that physical writing have been regarded as? What function would it have played? And the answer is it would have played the role as a writing that bore full covenantal apostolic authority right from the start. So what then kind of book is that? Well, in every real sense, it's a scripture-like book. It's a book that would have functioned like a new covenant document. And so part of the reason I think that argument's important is because it helps remind us that when the New Testament writers wrote, it's not like they wrote with one intention and only later did people regard these books as authoritative? And I think people have that in mind. They think, well, Paul wrote these occasional documents. They really weren't authoritative. No one thought they were authoritative. And only later, maybe 150 years later, the church looks back on Paul's letters and says, you know, these are kind of great. Don't you like these? I think these are fantastic. What do you think we should call? You think we should call these scripture? Let's do that. These are now scripture. And you can see that mentality is completely flawed, because if Paul wrote as a minister of the New Covenant, then when he wrote words down as a minister of the New Covenant, they would have authority instantaneously. You would have to wait to the later church to say he had it. And so this is why I think, unless you grasp the self-awareness of the apostles when they wrote, you'll always date canon late. Canon is an earlier phenomenon when you realize the apostles were aware of what they were doing.
I imagine it would be the apostles who would be most surprised at some of the modern discussion today that Irenaeus really was the first person to start talking about authoritative written doctrine.
Yeah. Well, Peter would be surprised, given that he quotes, or at least refers to, Paul's letters of Scripture in his second epistle. Yeah, this is a repeated refrain in modern scholars that, once again, it was the later church that first regarded these documents as distinctively scriptural, and that in the earliest stages, no one bothered to think that way. I think that's fundamentally flawed when we already see the conception that these books bore apostolic authority, then they would have been received as authoritative from the very start. So I think you're right. I think the apostles would have been, that would have blown their mind. Like, wait a second, did you not hear what we said? We said we were writing with the authority of Christ. You should have took our books that way.
So an interesting question is, why did the apostles write at all?
Yeah, this is a great question. I often get asked this question. People say, well, look, didn't the apostles deliver their message about Jesus orally first? And if they delivered it orally first, why didn't they just keep doing that? In other words, this second step of writing things down seems to be a later artificial step. What made the apostles do it? Why not just stick with oral proclamation? Now, that's an interesting question, but I think there's some answers to that question of why they wrote things down. I'll just mention a few little tidbits. One is actually what I mentioned earlier, is the covenantal context they were in. If they had this concept that they were the ministers of a new covenant, the idea that there would be new covenant texts would have been a natural, normal, even organic next step. Just like the Old Testament had texts that documented the terms of that covenant, you can understand why the apostles would have already had that in their minds. So that would be one reason to expect written texts. I think a second reason to expect written texts is just based on the apostolic mission itself. Their goal was to lay the foundation of the church and bring the gospel to the ends of the earth. Think about the Great Commission. It wouldn't have been long, though, before the apostles began to realize that that goal was not going to be able to be accomplished always in person. You can't always deliver every message orally. They can't travel to every church. They can't get to every place. If they were going to be effective in their mission, they needed to have some way to replicate their message more rapidly, and writing things down would have been a practical step for that. The last thing I'll mention is, I think, the awareness of the apostles' own limited lifespan. Inasmuch as the apostles begin to age out and die out, I think the urgency to write would have increased. People often ask, well, why didn't they write in the 30s and 40s a lot more? And they really only started writing in really the 50s and 60s. And I think there could be many answers to that question, but one possible answer is that people began to realize that the apostles were either dying or would be dying, and that they were leaving their deposit behind in a way that could be preserved and maintained for future generations.